Well, thank you very much for inviting me here. I think it was really quite a good point to be speaking at in the middle, as it were, and really not to sort of steal other people's thunder in terms of sort of summarising what's been talked about today. I thought that Simon's talk about looking at the future and the point that we can't stay still is very, very pertinent. Brendan's practice, I thought, was interesting from the point of view of size. You know, even Brendan's practice, you know, at a technical level, even they are described as a medium-sized business. And I think it was also interesting to reflect upon the fact that they were actually trying to be very aware of what was actually happening in the wider world and try to make their own luck. Peter obviously stirred things up a bit with a slightly different take on certain aspects, but it is a very brutal truth of a particular view of the marketplace. You know, that there are people out there who are definitely seeing that as the future, and indeed the ecology that we work in has fundamentally changed, and the way that an architect worked in the 1930s is completely different from the way that we're working today. And then obviously David then looked at another way of doing things and really reflected on the fact that they have a real mix and that they are focusing on networking and focusing on innovation. I think from my point of view, I really like being an architect. That's why I wanted to become an architect. I think it's worthwhile, and you know, from a personal point of view, I'm willing to sort of champion that and fight for those particular skills that we can actually offer. Going through the various presentations, you know, our practice has similarities to what everybody has talked about. In terms of Brendan, you know, our practice is a good deal smaller, but we are also looking at things like BIM and so on. Like David, we're also heavily working with the community and helping grow community groups and giving them advice which isn't really purely architectural, and indeed giving architectural clients advice that isn't purely architectural. But in terms of Peter's view as well, the you know, maybe perhaps because we are a regional practice, certainly the manner in which we are actually working with contractors has completely changed, and we are working with really rather a large number of contractors. Indeed, we have even worked with Pattons, who I know have been involved in today's event, bringing it forward and so on. I think going back to David, the point that we really see and the point that we have raised at colleges and so on is the manner in which we actually design. And we describe that as designing from the inside out. So like Peter said, there isn't value in the elevation, but there is real value in how a building is tailored, whether that is the servicing of it, its environment, or its functionality in terms of staff time, et cetera, or its ability to bring in funding through grants and so forth. These are all aspects that we are going to cover. Now, because I'm on the other side of the Irish Sea, I thought that maybe some of you would know our practice, but maybe others wouldn't. So I've got a few images which are perhaps the more architectural images of today's talk. But this particular building, Dundee Rep, in glorious black and white. You know, things didn't always have to be in colour. And really quite a brutalist building in a way, but very significant at its particular time, and really has brought about a long-term re-emergence of Dundee as a city. That is Dundee today, and Dundee Rep today, and we've worked with that client over the course of 25 years, and again, that's going to be a point that I will come back to later on. The Byer Theatre in St Andrews, and I think it's interesting that David was talking about the disaggregated school. St Andrews is a wonderful model of the disaggregated school in terms of the university, where it really is spread throughout the historic fabric of a city that is virtually a museum. The space at Dundee College was really a multi-purpose building that was serving a college that had looked at the very traditional industries which had declined as the industries in Dundee had gradually been depleted in the 70s and the 80s. And that has completely rebranded the college and has sort of reinvigorated the place. And the Howden Park Arts Centre in Livingston, a facility within one of Scotland's main new towns. And that's really just a trot through various aspects of our work. Now, when you look at those five projects, there are three RIB awards, there's a special RIB award, and 30 other awards from various providers. Now, I'm not saying that from the point of view of isn't it wonderful that these things have won awards. It's sort of looking at the wider context in which we're actually having to work. So, why am I here? I suppose the main thing is that I'm an architect. I'm a partner in Nicol Russell Studios. I lead a lot of the practice's procurement bids for my for my ills. But I've also been an assessor on the client side in terms of technical advisory work on government projects and things like that. And I have actually been involved in the selection of other design team members and contractors and so on. And ultimately, I think the real reason why I'm here is because I've been rather stroppy in the last year in terms of looking at procurement. There is an e-petition out there, which I must admit was a bit of a PR stunt, but it successfully got the PR. The RIS have been looking at procurement in detail. I'm sure Neil will speak much further about that, and I've been involved in that process, and I've also been involved in the RIBA's procurement reform group. Now, the reason for me being involved in all of that boring stuff, because I did start off by saying I really love being an architect, is going back to the awards that we've done these buildings, we are really proud of them, and boy, is it a struggle to get other ones like those jobs. And it's just the layers of bureaucracy that you have to wade through. And it's also got to the point where the penny has dropped in my mind, is what do we want to do as a society? Do we want to throw millions upon millions of pounds at very expensive procurement and get questionable quality? Or do we want to get excellent services and actually focus our money on frontline services? I'm sure everybody would agree it's the latter that we want, and that's what we're having to do. Now, I go back to the point that I made about fighting, and but also the point about changing. The RIS, and certainly I as a former vice president in the RIS, we have been trying to be very closely involved with government. We've met numerous ministers, MSPs, MPs, local authorities, chief executive officers, etc., etc. What we are trying to do is lead rather than follow. And I think we must be much, much more savvy and have to get involved in those particular fights. And it's stalled. There we go. Go back to the last one. Localism, right? That is a buzzword at the moment. And that is a map of Dundee. And in a way, this sort of proves the point. You don't really need to look at the detail of the thing. The pink buildings and the blue buildings. The pink buildings are all the buildings that were built during the New Labour boom. And the blue built by design teams that came out with the DIA chapter area. Now, the DIA chapter area is one of six in Scotland, and it covers an area that includes Fife, Tayside, Angus, Perth and Kinross, etc., etc. It's a very, very big geographic area. And the blue bits are the buildings that were designed within that geographic area. Now, if you look at the footprints, only 16% of those were from that local area. Now, I started by showing off our award-winning work, and for the simple fact that if you look at all the blue dots, despite having that pedigree in our home city, the only building that we have done on that map is the smallest blue blob, right? So that really is very, very telling, very telling. So, you know, what do we do about it? You know, the flip side of localism is that we and every other architect actually has to be clever. We have to go out there and we have to look for work. Now, I think one of the things that I will come back to is that everything is far too competitive at the moment. But we, you can see from that slide, we are involved in major engineering projects. We are involved in straightforward buildings, reports, and so on. But we are also involved in things across a wide geographic area. And I have to hold my hand up that we have done work over here as well, which probably is adding to your problems as well, one small part of your problems. But at the end of the day, that is because everything is so competitive in our own backyard. So how do we all get work? Well, from our perspective, a lot of the work that we showed there was effectively lottery-funded projects. And those are the projects that our office are probably relatively famous for, the ones that the people who know about us know about. But we've also been involved in three Jamie Oliver restaurants, and I don't think that is terribly well known. And it's not necessarily the things that we actually advertise that much. We have also tried numerous competitions and so on, and we came very close to winning the extension to the Scottish Parliament, which you see in this one. We did not win it. Might have been a good thing that we didn't win it. We are also involved in things like frameworks, and Peter mentioned earlier on things like the Ministry of Justice, Her Majesty's Court Service and so on, and we are on their frameworks. And the flip side of David's, we got a lot of criticism for working for a very expensive art gallery. In terms of the commercial realities of working in the regions, you know, okay, we've got a RIB award-winning work on the earlier slides, but the truth is we've also got jobs like that. So we've got a very diverse pool of work, and we really have to develop that because of the position that we are in. This is my next telling slide. This is a view of the various jobs that I showed at the start, plus one other. And it goes through each of them as a timeline in our office. And you could see the dates in which each of those jobs were tendered. And then below that, you could see a graphical representation of the practice size. Now, the block on the extreme left, it could have read seven people, but there was complexities in that, so I listed that as 14. But you could see that over the piece, the practice has grown steadily. And, you know, we got to a point where we had over 40 staff. And we're by far the biggest practice in our local area, but we still only had that tiny little blob in Dundee during the new Labour boom. If you then look at the lower series of figures, those are the tender prices harmonised to today's prices. And you look at that, and despite the fact that the practice has grown by a factor of three, or perhaps even bigger, more than that, we haven't managed to break through the threshold of 5.2 million. And fundamentally, that is down to the vagaries of the procurement system, because it has got to the point where if you haven't done one exactly like that, then you're not going to get to do one of those. And we'll come back to that in a minute. So the existing system, in terms of the context that we looked at with the RIS, PricewaterhouseCoopers have done a lot of research in terms of EU procurement. Construction is the most competitive and costly procurement sector across Europe. The sector sees an average 7.4 bidders per opportunity. But when you then look at the architectural sector, you might have as many as 60 to 70 bidders for one job. And, you know, I'll just leave that hanging in the air to see if everybody thinks that that's right. You might actually get as many as 150 bidders. That means that the system is slow, it's unwieldy, and it's difficult for the assessors to actually assess. And I said earlier on that I have been in that particular role. Many clients have got to the point where they're actually using five assessors to read through all of these written exams. And I must admit, I thought I had done my hires way back in the early 80s, but it looks as though I continue to have to do them on a daily basis. What we've done is we've costed out that effort. And the public sector, it's costing them 70,000 per bid. And it's costing the private sector 250,000. Now, that might be for a job of only 130,000. That isn't a saving. That is not driving the economy. It also leads to things like frameworks and the skewing of the system, which I'll go on to in a second. Now, I think the alarming thing is that PCW did all of this research, gave it to the European Union, and they've basically done nothing about it. Thresholds and things like that simply have not changed. Now, you look at it graphically, and this is the league table of Europe. Britain is the third most expensive country to procure anything in Europe. Only Iceland and Norway are more expensive than us. And primarily, that factors in bid time and assessment time. The next thing is inertia. And we're at the bottom of a recession. We need things to happen quickly. We are the third slowest country in Europe in terms of procurement. Only Greece and Malta are slower than we are. A wonderful company to be in. You know, wonderful company. And that is absolutely hopeless. The next thing is the point about skewing that I mentioned earlier on. SMEs, you know, and the vast majority of people are in this room are SMEs, account for 54% of employment in the public sector. The government, the UK government, wanted to give 25% of contracts, not financial value, but just a number of contracts, to SMEs. In 2010, they were giving out 11%. By 2011, they were only giving out 8%. So that really paints a picture that government, local government and so on, favours big business, favours corporate governance, etc., etc. The other thing that it points to is that when you actually look at the bid costs, there are monumental costs for small jobs. Monumental costs for small jobs, because the small jobs are on the left-hand side of the right-hand diagram, and you could see the curve shoot way up into the sky. That is wrong. Now, with the RIS, we've championed changes to that regime. We are saying to government at the highest level that it has to change, things have to be streamlined, things have to be improved, they have to be fair, they have to be competitive, but they have to be appropriate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Willie.